If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one Atmic Spirit. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is, it's all about serving the collective good. You know, it's never been about you or me. It's always been about our becoming extensions of divine energy throughout the cosmos. So to get into that mindset, we need to rethink ourselves and how we've interpreted who and what we are and with what we identify. So let's do this as a form of meditation, but more of a proactive speaking. It's not so much a going into a passive state as it is a calling yourself forward into a very active state of claiming the truth as you would have it be. So take a deep breath and intend your full integrative alignment with your God presence. And this is a good way to start your day or to start any time that you begin to lose yourself in the world and begin to identify in separation. This is a good practice. You can use the name of the Lord that you feel most opens your heart, whether it's Jesus or Sai Baba or the Travelers or the Mahanta or Krishna, Rama, whomever. But pick a divine form that to you represents the Most High, the Absolute Atmic Spirit. And I do it this way. You can do it however you do it. I will say, for example, Sai Baba, be my mind, be my thinking, be my heart, be my loving, be my breath, be my life force, be my acting and my intending. Let all that is be infused with your love. And may that be the very step that I take each day, the very breath I take each moment, the very recognition in every encounter that it is but you that I behold, regardless of the outer appearance. One spirit, one love, one life, one mind, one eternal existence, one all-pervasive awareness, one ever-rejoicing bliss. And you can use different words in different days. I really shun from doing anything that is by rote or repetitious or tends to put you to sleep, to where you lose that vivacity of direct encounter with the Beloved. Personally, I've found that one of the very best things you can do when you get up in the morning and you're not quite on your game yet, you're kind of out of it, and getting your coffee or your tea or whatever, is to the first words out of your mouth to be those of appreciation and gratitude and love. As you express your love verbally and out loud, and to that one divine essence that you most regard as the divine beloved, that immediately shifts your state into one of such sweet intimacies that then you can have your morning in the presence of the beloved and create enough time that you can do that. If you have to get up 15 minutes, half an hour earlier, whatever it is, do that. I used to always, when I had to be at work at 8 o'clock in the morning, let's see, I had to be at work at 9 in the morning. I used to get up an extra hour early so that I could have a full hour with the beloved, where I would talk to him, telling my problems, my hopes, my wishes, my dreams. Of course, I was a young kid, 20, 25 years old then, too. Now, it's more of a merging with the beloved. It's a dwelling in the presence that is so regenerating and so sweet. And then as you take that energy and you consecrate your whole day in serving, so that wherever you go, you're enhancing the collective good. Everyone you interact with, and even the slightest encounter, is enfolded in your goodwill, in the blessing that emanates from your chakras, from your heart, from your very intention, so that every single encounter is a blessing consciously bestowed. And everyone, you look into their eyes, and you look past the outer appearance, and you know that that one that dwells behind those eyes is the same as the beloved that you worship and adore, and is the same beloved that you behold when you look in the mirror into your own eyes. Because regardless of the outer form, there is one indwelling beloved animating all forms. So that becomes, you see, the most intense mystical yogic path you could possibly walk. It is one I have walked for most of my life, and probably almost exclusively the last 30 years. It takes constant bringing yourself back to that point of remembering, because we lose sight of that whenever we distract or allow the world to draw us into its momentums, its mindset, its thinking, all of which is illusory. There is nothing you will be hearing, seeing, or taught in the outer phenomenal world that is real. You are taught only from the beloved, the inner master, that lives in you as you, and speaks to you through your conscience and through your moral ethics. We all know what is right, which is to be loving. We all know what is wrong, which is to be unloving and to willfully seek to harm another. We all know that. And when we ignore that, we get in very bad trouble. And that's the only thing that causes us trouble. Because if we would live more consciously attuned as a divine functionary and operative, heeding only the inner voice of conscience and what the heart directs you in absolute clarity and purity to do, you wouldn't create karma. You wouldn't have bondage. You wouldn't have oppression. All of these things come from buying into darkness, illusion, or simply the ignorance of the unconscious seeds that we have sown in the past. We could call it all collectively the ego. It's the false self, the father of lies. That's all it's ever been, and it is also going to dissolve in your love as you learn to look beyond it to the face of the beloved. So, again, it's never been about you. It's always been about God. It's been about you awakening beyond the dream of being a limited mortal being, awakening beyond that dream, which it's all a dream, and consciously choosing to live your life as an extension of the divine. Wherever you are, regardless of the place or the environment or the situation or the circumstance or the race, creed, color, or gender preference of that person in front of you, none of that matters at all. The only thing that matters is that God alone is all that is. That's the only reality. That is the one that's listening to this voice speaking. That is the motivator of this speaker speaking. That is the one who is able to comprehend what is being shared here at a level that goes beyond the ego mind with its incessant chatter and doubting and questioning. Be aware that that part of the mind is not you. That is part of that collective conditioning that we call the ego. You are the listener without commentary. You are the lover without prejudice and bias. You are the server without personal motive or agenda. That is the real you with a capital U. That is the divinity. And that's what we're speaking to. And that's what we're calling forward to your more conscious awareness and participation. That is the reason that we have these weekly seminars, which next month, the 11th of next month, will mark our 7th year of weekly seminars. We call them the Voice of the Ashtar Command simply because you've known me as that for many, many decades. And our true voice is not about space or spaceships or Ashtar or Athena or anything of that nature. It's to awaken beyond the many to the one universal spirit. That is divine love. And whether you're a Venusian or a Martian or an Earthian or wherever you are within the cosmos, there is one universal Atma that gives you life and existence. Bear that in mind. So we want to transition people beyond looking into the sky for spaceships or trying to channel Ashtar or somebody else out there in the cosmos. We would like you to awaken to the divine being that you are, that is one with all life and all form manifestations throughout this and a myriad of universes, because creation is open-ended and endless. So there will never be a time when you will ever cease to be. There will never be a time when you're actually, in fact, ever born into a form. How could the unlimited Atma ever be born? How could it ever die? What else could this be but simply a play-acting in illusion? What else could it be but a series of dreams wrought of forgetfulness? You catch my drift? So I'd like to share with you a passage from Sai Baba from the book Life is a Dream, Realize It, by my good friend Joy Thomas. And she quotes Baba here. "The world is an illusion, which on account of the play of Maya seems to be subject to evolution of names and forms, and involution of the same, until the whole is melted in pralaya, or universal fire. An illusion disappearing with the illumination of wisdom, as light dispels the delusion of the snake with which the rope was hidden. Then the knowledge that the Atma is all fills and fulfills. One is Atma through and through. The Atma is always content and blissful. To you, one thing appears more attractive than another. And so, the sensual attachment and affection are the results of delusion and greed. It is like a dog that gnaws a bone, and when blood oozes out of its tongue and gets mixed with the bone, it relishes the bone the more for that additional taste. When it gets another bone, it drops the first one and runs after the second. What the Atma does is to superimpose upon the external, evanescent object its inherent bliss, and thus envelops that object with a certain attractiveness. Objects are taken to be pleasure-giving, but they are not really so. They only add to the grief. It is ever-changing, this affection towards things seen through the deluded eye. It is limited, not unlimited. Atma is one. It subsumes all. By knowing Atma, all is known. Atma alone can know. Nothing else is capable of knowing. The Atma knows, and all else is Atma. Through multiplicity of body, country, etc., is non-existent. They appear to be many because they are formed by the tendencies of the mind. They simply appear on the screen as different and varied. In the dream, though one experiences a multiplicity, one knows that they are unreal creations of one's own mind. This is clear to the witness of the dream. Similarly, the experience of the waking stage is also a mental picture at most. Sri Satya Sai Baba." It's very rare that you can be living on Earth as a contemporary of a full avatar such as Satya Sai Baba, and even more rare that they're recognized in their lifetime. I believe Baba is the only one that's been recognized by millions within his own lifetime. And even more rare to be able to read the actual writings and teachings of a full avatar. And those of us, like myself, who've had the incredible good fortune to be in his physical presence and to be taught by him directly, it's even more rare and more precious. So this is a time that is incredibly extraordinary in the fact that you can have a fully God-realized master actually teaching you at this time on this planet. And the fact that he has disappeared from the physical form is good in the sense that we can no longer just place that energy and devotion to that form, but that we can actually realize that he is now everywhere. And the appearance of the form only made it seem like he was focalized in that tiny little form in India. So you can see how very much the form deludes and deceives us. And that is another reason that it's so very important for us to look at the things that we have endowed with importance and that we've become attached to that are material, that will leave us at some point because they are of the material world. They have form. They have organization, which implies impermanency. Spirit is unlimited. Only the mind creates and projects form. So anything that you see when you open your eyes and look around is a densification of thought. That's all it is. It's a thought form that you have projected out of your mind, accorded a certain value and interpretation to, and because it is illusory and mind-born, it will at some point dissolve, disintegrate, die, and disappear. Sai Baba spoke of the pralaya. Pralaya is what happens to all of the material universes beneath the spiritual planes, the realms of duality and polarity. All of these, at the end of a major cycle of manifestation, are dissolved in the fire. They are dissolved, and then the great Sukhmad, the great Sarmad, the great It of Itself, reissues creation after a cycle of rest. And I believe this is this fiery dissolution, which isn't going to happen next week, next year, or anytime soon, so don't be worried about that. I think that's what a lot of people, particularly the visionaries who see a fiery end to all life, I think that's what they're actually seeing, and they're trying to interpret it out of a mental understanding and belief system that causes them to fear the end of the world, or the Armageddon, or the destruction by fire. But you see, all life, all souls are drawn up out of the lower worlds at the time of the dissolution, so nobody is destroyed. Souls can't be destroyed. Souls are part of God. So you don't have to worry about that. That's the problem, you see, when you listen to channeling or you read books by masters and or people who say they're masters, or people who have not genuinely reached God realization. They're guessing. They're parroting teachings they have been taught, often erroneously, but they're not knowers. That's why you need to go to a genuinely God-realized master and read their teachings. And if you're so fortunate to be able to go where they happen to be and they're not on every street corner, they're not advertising in the New Age journals, and they're certainly not calling themselves masters, but you will know if they have something truly to impart because it's always the same universal truth. I don't care what the teaching or what the master, all illumined master teachers teach the same thing, that God alone is real and your true self is identical with God as the wave is with the ocean, as the air current is with the atmosphere, as the sweetness is with honey. Like that, you are indistinguishable from God. And the only thing that we're here to do is awaken to that and be that and drop all this charade. And it's a charade. Baba says that we've become overly fond of perpetrating this self-deception of saying, well, I'm just a limited human being. Oh, That's not what any God-realized master would ever say to you. So the spiritual life is all about replacing selfish willfulness with yielded, accepting willingness. Willingness. Are you willing to endure all things to see the face of God? To discover that it is, in fact, your own face. If it were so easy to accomplish, everyone would be God-realized, and this planet would have dissolved in Pralaya eons ago. So all this, it's a sequential revelation that has to ride in on your present level of consciousness, your present vibration, your present willingness and openness to receive, and your current nervous system. We spoke last week about how important it is for your unfoldment to be gradual and not forced in any way. It's a razor's edge. And it's very easy for mysticism and schizophrenia to be mistaken. A true mystic is one who has become completely one with the Divine Beloved. A schizophrenic is one who lives in a reality totally out of sync with the world as it is in their present state of consciousness, in their present reality, in their present arena. I have been the witness of both of those states. And they're very, very fine line of division when one slips into the other. That's why it's so important to be grounded in loving service. Don't force things spiritually. Stay grounded. And the only thing that's going to ground a mystic is serving. Otherwise, you get all involved in your visions and you turn self-focused and selfish, and then you get into trouble. So stay grounded by seeing yourself as a servant of all life. Wherever you move, wherever you go, make the people there better for your having been there. Find some way to make people happy. If you want to be happy, do something, anything, to brighten the life of another. Smile, be friendly, give hugs and kisses, take hands, hold them with tenderness, look into people's eyes, really listen when they speak. And while they're speaking, keep reminding yourself, this is my Lord, this is my beloved, this is my Jesus, this is my Sai Baba, this is the Mahanta, this is the spiritual traveler. This is Divine Mother. Whatever your chosen form is that you adore and consider to be the divine head of your life, see that one in those eyes and treat that person with the same respect that you would your Guruji. Lay your life down. You know, when a priest or a nun is ordained, in the Catholic faith, and I believe also when you take the Buddhist vows of Bodhisattva and the different empowerments in the Buddhist tradition, I believe they do the same thing. And probably in the other world faiths as well, they have ceremonies where you lie face down with your arms spread out before the altar. In Christian parlance, that's called a laid-down life. You lay your life down in the service of the divine. And that divine dwells in humanity. You want God? God can only be found in your brother and sister. You want Jesus Christ? He can only be found in your brother and sister. You want to find yourself? Pay attention to what you're seeing in your brother or sister. Because depending on how you see them, you'll either lose yourself or find yourself. You'll either realize the divinity that you share that's a common denominator, or you'll lose yourself in the outer form appearance. That is why people lose their anointing. They make a big freaking deal out of the outer organization that a master started, and they begin to worship the book or the organization or the church or whatever was created around that master, and they make that more important than the loving, than the honoring of the divine. They lose sight of the divine in the paper trail, paper shifting, whatever, of the organizational red tape. And I've seen it happen so many times. And it's sad. But that's where you lose yourself in the form. My blessed teacher, John Roger, told me a good 40 years ago about his own organization, MSIA. He told me, don't ever be loyal to a little organization like MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness. And don't ever be loyal to this form, pointing to his body. Be loyal only to spirit. When you're loyal to spirit, to the soul that you are, then you're loyal to everyone. And if you're not loyal to your soul, to your spirit, you can't be loyal to anyone else. And those were the days when I was wrestling in my mind between loyalty to Sai Baba, loyalty to Jesus Christ, and loyalty to him. And it took me a while to get it all sorted out that, hey, these are just different faces and forms to which the one love expresses. They're not different. Sai Baba's love, the love of Jesus, the love of John Roger, the love of Amma, whomever, it's one divine love. Just the outer dress is different to suit different tastes. We don't all like the same colors or the same foods or the same flavors. So God comes in all these different flavors. Every person is a different flavor. So that is the message. Don't be loyal to a book. A book is dead unless it comes alive in your spirit. You are the living word. The living word doesn't live in the pages of a book. And yet many people worship the book. And church simply means congregation. It means gathering. The whole planet is the mandir, the temple, the gurudwara, the Holy of Holies of Almighty God. The whole of the world is your puja room, place of worship. Offer yourself, offer your life, lay your life down, lay down your life as you think it is. And give yourself entirely to loving and caring and sharing and giving, and making the place where you are happier, lighter, better, brighter, for your having been there. Be a kingdom ambassador that every place you put your foot, the kingdom sprouts up just like Jesus said, like the mustard seed. You plant a little mustard seed, and man, that bush takes over everywhere. Let the kingdom of God arise from your footfall and proliferate like a mustard bush. Let your every action become your love made manifest, the fire of your heart, your passion, your consecration, so that every day is a yajna, it's a sacrificial oblation to the all that is. That will earn you more. That will give you more benefit than sitting for thousands of hours trying to focus on your breath or repeating a mantra, because inherently all spiritual practice is selfish, isn't it? Don't we do whatever we do spiritually generally because we want to awaken, we want to calm our mind, we want to discipline our emotions, we want to fix ourselves in some way, instead of just getting over ourselves, surrendering the self, losing sight of the self, because the self you're trying to fix is a fiction. The self that you are is perfect. It cannot be messed up by this shadow of a personal self that's falling upon the face of time space. Are you affected by what your shadow falls on? Are you? Your personal self in this appearance that you think is you is the same as a shadow. Untouched, unmarred, undesecrated by whatever it passes over. And this little blip, this wink, this less than a wink of a life that is called an incarnation. So it's time for us to drop the role play. It is time to open our eyes. And instead of praying, dear God, please help, please send, please do, please fix, let's be God by very simply affirming with the first opening of our eyes in the morning, God is my mind. God is my thinking. God is my doing. God is my loving. God is my breathing. God is my living. God is my all in all. And then eventually we can drop the my, because the my is a fiction, you see. The me and the my and the I become supplanted by the we. You begin to experience yourself as one with all life. So you move from the I and the me and the my to the we. And then from the we, eventually that dissolves into pure being. Sat Chit Ananda, being, awareness, bliss. But if you keep following other people and you don't realize yourself, what have you got that's yours? We're not meant to be followers and imitators. We are meant to be manifestors and materializers from the invisible into the visible. You'll notice that every God-realized master, well, let's up the ante here. Every avatar, an avatar is a soul that has virtually become one with God prior to their incarnation as an avatar. Avatar is not a state you can acquire in any human lifetime. It is developed. So when an avatar comes, avatar means the direct descent from the invisible, indivisible form of the divine. That is the closest mankind can ever get to God, because God is an invisible spirit that becomes particularized in time-space to serve a particular purpose of embodying divinity so that man can worship, adore, heed the teachings, and have a direct experience with the God presence, which Sai Baba says only really fully makes that connection at the time we are granted full Padanamaskar. Padanamaskar is when you touch the feet of the avatar. And he says at that point, man's body, which represents the negative pole, and God's avatar body, which represents the positive pole, come together, and God and that person merge. That happened to me back in 1979 at Vrindavan, Sai Baba's ashram in Whitefield, outside of Bangalore. I felt that was the end of everything that I had incarnated for. Was that day that he looked down at me, and I was in a state of complete oneness with him. I wasn't seeking, I wasn't supplicating, I wasn't acting, I wasn't thinking. I was being one with him. and he gave me full Padmanabhaskar. And I touched his feet, and I kissed the right one, which represents the male Father God, and the left foot, which represents the female Mother God. And then I laid my head on them, and then I pressed my cheek to each of his feet, and he was still standing there. So I looked up, and he was in bliss. His hands were raised. He was rocking back and forth. There was a smile on his face. And so I went down again and kissed his feet and laid my head upon them. And afterwards, I felt like, well, there's no words. I was completely never the same again. I can't speak more about it. But the dog, what was so interesting was the dog that used to come out and lay in the pathway where Sai Baba would walk, and the ladies would try to shush him away and get him out of the path so Baba wouldn't step on him or whatever. And the dog would lay there, and the minute Baba would walk down the pathway, the dog would bow. He would put his little paws, four paws out, put his head down and bow. And I thought, you know, the dog's got more sense than we do. He recognizes that that's God. But you know what happened to me after I had Padmanabhaskar? That same dog came and bowed before me. I'll never forget that. It was just, it totally shook me up. Because, you know, when you have experiences like that, you realize, hey, the whole thing's rigged. This dog is probably some great rishi who has taken that form just so he could be close to the avatar. And you have that feeling about the monkeys and the birds and the donkeys and the cattle. All of them probably are great souls that took those forms just so they could have a birth at the time of the avatar. And, I had so many paranormal, extraordinary, mystical experiences in the years that I was with Sai Baba in his physical presence. And I'd like to share that with you because many of the things that I'm sharing, most of you have not had the experience of. And now as I grow towards the end of my incarnation, I realize that, oh my heavens, I have something to share from my experiences that very few people on this planet have actually had that experience of. So I'm going to be sharing for the little bit longer that I'll probably be doing these seminars. I don't know, maybe 7 years is it. I don't know at this point. I'm not the decider of that, the Lord is. But I feel like it's almost like a full cycle, the 7 years. And so I want to share with you the fire of my heart, the incredible love I have for each one of you, which is not my love, but God's love. It is the love of Sai Baba that pours through my voice, that pours through my form, that has become what I am. There's nothing left in me. He's pressed the poison and the pus and the all of the awful stuff out of me, like Krishna when he's dancing on the serpent with the many heads. Baba has pressed all of that out of me. And he's pressed me flat. So my life is laid down flat as a pancake. And he picks it up and uses it, or he discards it. And I don't care what he does. The life is his. It's for his purpose. I have no absolute desire for anything but his will. May his will be done, and his will is done, for there is only the will of the Supreme Father Mother, all that is. Call it what you may, the light, the truth, the way. Call it what you may. There is one only, inhabiting all forms. Like electrical current is one, illumining all the light bulbs. Although you go to a light store and you see all the different fixtures and the size of bulbs and the wattages, know that life is one. Divine current is one. And that is what gives you life and intelligence and creativity and the ability to call forth out of the invisible realms divine manifestation. We, through our devotion, cause the embodiment of the avatar to take form in time and space. It's our devotion concretized. And I often think it's interesting that Satya Sai Baba, if you would look at the majority of people on the planet, most of them have dark skin and crinkly black hair, don't they? Most of them have brown eyes. So Sai Baba looks like the majority of people on this planet. And yet when I came to him in 1972 for my first physical visit, he looked like he had blonde hair and blue eyes. And he kept transforming into Christ. One minute he'd be Jesus, and I'd be in Palestine kneeling at the feet of Jesus, which was one of my incarnations. And the next moment I'd be in Puttaparthi, India, kneeling at the feet of Sai Baba. And so often I'd go to the well to draw a bucket of water, and he would come out in those days spontaneously. And I would drop the bucket and run and fling myself at his feet, like I'm sure I must have done at the time of Jesus. So some things just never change. I was always the one that wanted to be at the feet of the Lord. And I'm still that way. Only what I've discovered is that your feet are the feet of my beloved. Your feet are the feet of the Christ. Your hands are the pierced hands of the Christ. Your body is but the body of my beloved. And so I can't see any more difference when I look at you. You all look the same. You all look like someone I love with all my heart, all my soul, all my mind, all my being. But I only see that one. I kind of lost track of what I was going to talk about tonight. I just have to flow with what arises in the spirit. And what arises in my spirit tonight is we are to become gentle, innocent, and as dependent on the beloved as a kitten is dependent upon its mother to carry it to safety. The highest form of devotion, I believe, is leaving your life and your affairs to the Lord's arranging. And you can only do that when you love God, because love implies total trust. And without trust, there could be no genuine love. So that is why perfect love casts out all fear, because love and fear are incompatible. However, we do experience fear, don't we? We do. And the challenge is to do it scared. Do it anyway. Do whatever scares you anyway as an outrageous act of and leap of faith. And then when you do that, watch how the fear is transformed into power. The fear is often power waiting in the wings for you to leap out in an act of trust and faith. And notice that fear released in faith becomes power. And live with the attitude, not my will, Lord, but thine be done. You select, you choose, you place me, you decide where. And then be willing to accept whatever God gives as what is for your very best spiritual advancement. Whatever it is, be humble, be willing, and be accepting of whatever is. And resolve to love and serve regardless of how you feel, of the circumstance. Rise above that mean-spirited ego that only thinks about itself. And don't even think of telling the Lord how to arrange your life or what to do about your future. You rant and rave and curse and complain because you missed your flight, only to later hear that it was hijacked or crashed. You don't know what's for your highest good. I don't know. None of us do. So accept the fact that you don't know your best interests, or even you don't even know what you really want. I mean, think back what you prayed for years ago, or maybe even as a child, and how happy you are that that prayer somehow was lovingly segued off into a better plan for you by the Lord, a better path for you. And realize that attachment is what binds you here to these lower phenomenal realms and keeps you from the bliss of full realization of your divinity and oneness with God. Know that the eyes are ever hungry, and the biggest temptation before us all is, again, placing energy and devotion to a form, be it to a master of an organization, you know, not a real master, but like the head of an organization, like a, you know, a pastor or a teacher or something, or even placing our devotion with a marriage. That's another form. Or even to your homestead or your family. These are all material attachments that come in any given season and cycle of a life. But truth be told, you're in marriaging, in relationship, in loving with every single soul on the planet, or have been in some lifetime. We've all been the mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and children of everyone on the planet. We've also been all the enemies and adversaries. We've played all of these roles with one another. And the purpose is so that we could learn compassion, empathy, forbearance, forgiveness, and dissolve the ego in unconditional love. So don't be loyal to any form, any organization, any relationship in the outer world, because it's going to leave. It's going to change. Nothing in form is going to have eternal existence. Eternal existence is a quality. It's Satchitananda. It's God. It's formless spirit, formless life. It's living life. It's the living word. It's the living love. You can't confine that in any form or any organization. And the minute you do, you have come into a position of idolatry. That's idolatry, when you worship the form and lose sight of the living spirit that every form but veils. So when that leader, that person, that organization, that family, that homestead, or whatever dies, or the form disintegrates or otherwise falls apart, when that happens, when you have attachment to that, you're left bereft. And that is what causes you to reincarnate. Yeah, because you have placed yourself in the service of the material instead of the living spirit. So the spiritual life will always challenge the areas where you experience the greatest fear, the greatest attachment, the greatest avoidance, because attachment and avoidance are two sides of the same coin. What you hate, you attract as much as that which you love. So you'll always be confronted with the choice to make it all about you, ego, or all about loving and serving anyway, regardless. And sometimes you'll find, as I have upon a number of occasions, like today, in my case, that once you've accepted an unpleasant situation and surrendered it to the Lord, that often God's grace will lift it off of you and you out of it and place you in a whole other better outcome. Why? Well, because you passed the test. when you pass the test by accepting whatever is with a sweet and yielded spirit, there is no more need for that. You've learned what it was meant to teach you. So your attitude to anything that comes toward you, whether it's a situation, person, event, whatever, is to ask that situation, what are you here to teach me? What are you here to teach me? That is the attitude with which to greet any situation. I remember Oprah Winfrey shared a dream she had where she was having one of those flying dreams, and many people and things were flying towards her, and each one that came to her, she said, what are you here to teach me? And every time she asked that, she ascended higher and higher and higher. And that's the key to how to ascend, how to move into soul transcendence, is to have that attitude. What are you here to teach me? And then to just humbly, with great honor and respect, serve whomever, whatever is in your immediate presence. Serve everyone as the one beloved. And that will bring you faster and quicker than any other single practice to awakening to the oneness with God that you've always had and always been and will be eternally. So I hope this has been helpful for you. I just want to say how honored I am to serve you each week. I bow before each of you. I kiss your lotus feet. And I ask your pardon for any time that my ego has filtered or colored the message I've given you. Hopefully, through my serving you, more and more of that is dying. And more of the true me is able to come forward, which is not me, but he. I offer all of this that has been shared tonight in the service of all life and with deepest love. Let's chant Om Shanti, 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 and just have a feeling of sending love and peace to all beings on this earth and throughout the cosmos. Deep breath. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Namostate, Adonai.